Blog Talk Radio.
Providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Manapro, nurturing life. Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, is taking a few days of very well-deserved vacation off. He will be back with us Monday, August 15th. I'm Pat Foreman, and I'm an avid sustainable agricultural advocate and, of course, author of City Chicks and co-author of Chicken Tractor, Day-Range Poultry, Backyard Market Gardening, and a few other titles. Our guest co-host today is Christine Heinrich. She's the author of How to Raise Poultry. So Christine will be joining us shortly. Today is Wednesday, August the 10th, and we would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio talk show that is broadcast around the world. This show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, gardening, urban farming, emergency preparedness, and living a self-sufficient and healthy lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day. At our website, just go to chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. And from there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. While you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, we invite you to join us in the chat room that's going on right now. Just checking the chat room there. Sorry about that. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans that have around the country and even across the world. We have the show. You can also may have for our special guests have them on. To join the live chat room is really easy. You just log on to blogtalkradio.com, click register, and then get your own creative screen name and song right away with the chat room chickeneers, and it is that easy. We'd also like you to mark this radio favorite request on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. Please take a moment to do this today, and we would like to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manapro.
Manapro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Manapro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Manapro, nurturing life.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Need an incubator? Think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, technology you can trust. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
All righty. Welcome back to the Chicken Whisperer Backyard Poultry and Sustainable Lifestyles Talk Show. It is now time. We have a very special guest co-host today, and it is now time to welcome the one and the only Christine Heinrich. Christine,
well,
Heinrich.
I
Christine,
am. Gosh,
welcome.
I don't usually
show,
get that
Christine.
Big of a welcome. Thank you, Pat.
Would you like to have another drum roll? You deserve it. Sure.
Maybe later.
Why not?
Maybe
here you
later.
Go. This is for you, Christine.
Not later.
Okay. Christine Heinrich is the author of How to Raise Poultry and also the historian for the Society for the Protection of Poultry Antiquities. So, Christine, thanks for coming on and co-hosting with this with me today. How are you doing?
I'm just doing great, Pat. I'm having a great day out here. It's been pretty cool. Has it been? How's the weather been out there in Virginia?
Yeah, it's hot. It is so hot. You can fry eggs on the sidewalk. It's so hot out here.
Yeah,
I
visited Texas recently, and it was extremely hot. It really took the fun out of being there.
Oh my gosh, what were you doing in Texas?
Well, I was there for the Mayborn Literary Nonfiction Conference, where they gave me an award, the third place in the reported narrative category for a story I wrote, unfortunately not about chickens, but about wildlife. There was a wildlife crime out here in which someone shot three of the elephant seals on the beach, and it took a while to solve it, so it was kind of a whodunit story, and I was very excited to have the opportunity to tell how that came out. So I'm working on a rewrite now, and it will be published in the conference's book next year, and I hope to find another magazine. A couple of editors expressed interest in it, so I'm excited about that.
Well, that's wonderful. Congratulations on that award. For our listeners that don't know, Christine, besides having many talents in the poultry arena, is a noted journalist and especially an environmental journalist. And you've had a lot of publications, Christine, to your credit. Can you tell us a few of the others?
Oh, well, you know, I was an environmental journalism fellow a couple of years back at the National Tropical Botanical Garden out in Hawaii. And that was a wonderful experience. Yeah, it was really great because Hawaii is struggling with invasive species, and that was the main focus of that. And the botanical garden is trying to keep those native plants going. I was interested when I was out there to find that prior to the arrival of the Polynesians, way back, you know, over 1,000 years ago, the largest animals on the island were actually flightless ducks that had grown quite large. Yes, isn't that? It's another book I'd like to write. You know, it's sort of a niche interest. I did get interested in the Nene goose, which is the state bird out there, which is also endangered, and but has made some people have really supported in bringing it back. So that's, you know, the one of the things I loved about the Nene is one of the reasons they're endangered is that they are so sweet-tempered and so trusting that they'll almost become pets to just about anyone who will feed them. And so they have to discourage people from feeding them too much, because then they end up staying on the ground and they get hit by cars, and it's a problem for them. So anyway, they're a real beautiful wild goose, and we certainly would like to keep those around. But that was a wonderful experience. There were only 10 of us that year, and actually the program was closed for a couple of years, and this year it is now going on again right now. The fellows are at the National Tropical Botanical Garden. They have a new building out there at the garden, and for any listeners who ever get a chance to go to Hawaii, it's on the island of Kauai, and this is definitely a place you want to visit. It's really... They actually filmed some of Jurassic Park there, because the foliage is so unusual and it just looks so primeval. So it's definitely an interesting spot, and things you won't see any other place.
Wow. And Maui, I applied for an internship in Maui. I was turned down, but it was at the local hospital. But in investigating Maui, it seemed like just the idyllic place to live. It was like paradise. So I have been there, luckily, but it was years later. But wow, and you got to do a fellowship there. Oh, you lucky person.
Right. It was. I felt very fortunate to be selected for that. So that was, and it certainly informed my work and was in many ways a life-changing experience. I really grew to appreciate the ocean more, and that's, I have become more involved with the ocean as I live on the coast out here. So it's just, there's a lot of wonderful things out there. I mean, this is, Pat, as a journalist, you know, that you always want people to say, award-winning journalist, you know, that's always got to precede your name.
Or author, that's often precedes it too.
You definitely want to have that out there. So that's the awards that I've won lately. I used to be a business journalist as well, and I won a big award for, you know, it was a really interesting series because it was it was 10 years ago or so. There's a lot of business mergers going on, and, you know, I don't know if things have changed over 10 years, but at that time I looked into the numbers, and it turns out that those mergers that people make so much money off, when you look at them 5 years later, something like 80% of them have financially not made money. The problems of merging two companies become so expensive to resolve that that they're not successful. So anyway, you know, that was an interesting story. That's one of the great things about being a journalist, is that there's a new story coming down the pike every day.
Yeah, right now, every day.
Yeah, and it's always interesting. It's always real different. I'm working on a story today about Egyptian chickens, the Fayumi.
Egyptian chickens? Yes. Do they walk like Egyptian chickens?
Yeah.
They have a special,
I think, the Egyptians learned to walk like them.
You know, that might be true. Because chickens do have a little peculiar kind of walk that's kind of like an Egyptian, come to think of it. Oh, that's funny.
That's right.
Oh, that's
cool. A very interesting chicken expert, Kermit Blackwood, was writing about them, and he is actually, in his background, he is Egyptian, and he is ethnically, his background is from the Bejawi area of southern Egypt, where these chickens actually did a lot of their development over several thousand years. So he had a lot of inside information that otherwise I would never have been able to get, and so we worked together to write this up. We're finishing it up, and it, I believe, will be in the November-December issue of Backyard Poultry. So we'll see. Yeah, we're meeting a deadline today on that. And, you know, of course, he's just a fabulous source of information and knows so much about Egyptian history. It's really been wonderful to work with him. And so, you know, readers can look forward to this. It's not a recognized breed. They are, I don't know if you'd really call them a land race, but they have certainly been, they were brought to Egypt as gifts and were treated as sacred birds rather than being used for meat and eggs, because the Egyptians already had a lot of poultry and eggs from, they had already domesticated geese, they had domesticated ostriches, and of course,
really?
Very interesting to me. I learned a lot about Egypt in writing this, and of course, the Nile is a flyway for a lot of migratory ducks, so they already had plenty of poultry, but they honored the chickens because they, of course, crowed the sun god Ra up in the morning.
Yeah.
And so they were always calling to the greatest god, and so they lived in the temple and ran free.
Wow.
Oh,
the other chickens also crow to Ra besides the Egyptians?
They did, but see, the Egyptians, they didn't have the internet, so they didn't know about other chickens at that point, so... The ducks were.
Yeah, it's interesting that the chickens can be related to with deities, like the god. In fact, Fiona just posted in the chat room. She says she has an article coming out in Backyard Poultry also next month about ancient chicken history, and that is really fascinating. She came on live and shared some of the trivia and the facts about ancient chicken history. So I'm really looking forward to that. And, of course, one of them used to be revered as gods. Is that, or we're just connected with the gods, maybe? But
you know, I don't know of any actual chicken gods, but maybe Fiona does. You know, maybe she can help us out with that.
Yeah. Well, I know the Romans highly revered them, and they even used the rooster as one of their bravery symbols. You know,
right.
And they traveled. Their armies traveled with a flock of chickens. I mean, when they went, they had their chickens with them. Yeah. As did, I must say, was Robert E. Lee. Here's a trivia question, trivia answer for you. Did you know that Robert Lee traveled with a chicken?
A little hen.
He did. It's reported that he did. She slept under the general's bed and gave him an egg every morning for the great general's breakfast. And her name was, there you have great generals traveling with chickens, laying hens under their bed. So this was a pet chicken.
That's a fabulous story. That's great to know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I can certainly appreciate that because we got two young pullets a month or so ago, a speckled Sussex and a partridge Rock. And one of them has finally started to lay. And so we had those wonderful little pullet eggs this morning. They were so golden and just delicious. And the other one is any day now, I'm sure she will get started.
Yeah. You know, I really prefer the pullet eggs, Christine, because I think they're richer. They're almost like guinea eggs. They're just really rich and fresh and golden.
These certainly were. I cracked them into a bowl with one of the more senior girls' eggs, and you know, they're all eating the same thing, but these were much more golden, and the flavor was very rich. They were really wonderful eggs.
Very rich. Okay, well, it's time for the news, Christine. This is brought to us by Meyer Hatchery, and let me just run the Meyer tribute, and we'll be right back.
Since 1985, Meyer Hatchery in Polk, Ohio has been a family-owned and operated business. Meyer Hatchery is a year-round hatchery that offers over 160 breeds of poultry, including chickens, ducks, geese, turkeys, guineas, beefowl, and game birds, plus a full line of feed and supplies. Just need a few baby chicks? No problem. Meyer Hatchery will ship as few as 3 baby chicks. Check them out online at MeyerHatchery.com. That's MeyerHatchery.com.
All righty, welcome back. Christine, our special guest co-host is Christine Heinrichs. Christine, do you have any chickens in the news to share with us?
Any chickens in the news? Well, you know, I'm sorry, I'm sort of caught flat-footed here this morning.
No problem.
But I don't. Well, one piece of news that not really, I just wanted to let everyone know that the Mother Earth News Fair that was scheduled for Marin County has been canceled. That was over Labor Day weekend. But the other, this new heritage breed expo is going to be held on the 13th, 14th, and 15th. It's the National Heirloom Exposition in Santa Rosa, California. I'm going to try to get there for one of those days. And this is, perhaps Jeanette mentioned this, it's being sponsored by the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy.
Excellent. I'm not surprised. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. That's a new thing that's never been done before, and I hope to get up for at least one of the days. Some other news that I have about the Crossroads Poultry Show that's coming up that's going to be so big. The SPPA is going to be offering a special award. It's the one of the original 1905 copies of the American Poultry Association Standard of Perfection as a grand award.
Ooh,
as you know,
really?
It's a beauty. It's a lovely little green book with gold embossed lettering on the cover. And it has those original drawings by Frank Lane Sewell in it. That's going to be the grand award to the best heritage breed bird out there among the SPPA. Now, you have to be a member of SPPA to compete for that. So do consider joining SPPA if you're going to be out there and entering your birds. This is certainly something, it's an unusual offering. As it turned out, in the donation that we got of historic poultry books, there were three copies of this. And so the officers decided that it would be worthwhile to share this with some other historic breed fancier. So
nice. Ooh, I'd love to have that myself. And you said it's in 1905? 1905.
This is over 100 years old.
And that's the Standard of Perfection, right?
That's the Standard of Perfection. It was a small book.
Dang.
It's about 6 inches by 8 inches at that time. But it's just a beautiful little book, and it documents what was going on in 1905, what birds were looking like, what were the concerns. Of course, the classes were very different at that time, and a lot of birds that are in there now were not in. It's just a wonderful little book, and it's something, you know, certainly everyone should go by the SPPA table and take a look at it, because it will be on display there during the show.
Excellent.
So
very good.
See, I thought I didn't have any news, and I did.
Well, you always have news, Christine. In any conversation I have with you, there's always news. That's one of the wonderful things about you, yeah. Well, I've got three pieces here. One picks up from what we were talking about yesterday about kids getting we had a little bit of a discussion about how these there's a very large breeder facility that's closing down in the United Kingdom. They're just retiring. There are 72, and they have something like 60 rare breeds and special breeds they ship all over the world. And there was a little bit of a discussion about how we really need young people to step up and become take ownership and leadership in some of these antique breeds and become master breeders themselves. And so this article is about how small animals are so popular right now among kids. And this is written by Dan Barker from the Times News. And it says, with fewer and fewer kids having access to larger plots of land, the smaller animals are becoming increasingly popular as 4-H projects, and this is true across the country. Also, more individual children are showing more than one kind of small animal. And they use an example here of Michael Klein. He's 11 years old, and he was at the Morgan Weldon Valley 4-H Club. He showed chickens for the first time, and he also showed rabbits. So he's an 11-year-old jumping in. And Klein said he showed his barred rock chickens and guinea fowl, and he liked the feathered animals despite how hard it could be to get them cleaned up. All the time. He says, it's so fun to watch them chase the bugs. Well, you know, when they're in their cages, sometimes it can be a little hard to keep them cleaned up a little bit. He says he loves to watch them chase bugs. He says they're so funny when they run. And then they went on, he named his little rabbits Shadow, Remar, and Sally. He says he loves the soft fur on that. He's a tactile guy, it sounds like. And he likes them to hop around and chew on something. There's also little Cammy 13. She picked up some Americana chickens because it's fun to have the different colored eggs. And there was also Sweeney's. There was a young kid named Sweeney, first time to show a goat. So what this is there's a saying, you know, Christine, that goes, chickens can be the gateway to other livestock, and I think rabbits might be in there too, but one of the trends we've noticed here in our 4-H, in our county, Rockbridge County, Virginia, is the poultry club is just dwindling. There's four or five, and they've been there through the years, but it's not growing. But with the urban chickens that are coming along, we've talked to the 4-H club people and the extension about maybe expanding that to urban 4-H, where they don't have to raise 100 or 50 chicks in the poultry chain. They could just raise maybe 10, for example, and then give two of them to the auction to refund the poultry chain. So that's something that is probably keeps coming up.
That's
so what do you
idea,
think about
Pat.
That, Christine?
I think that's great. And one friend of mine in San Luis Obispo, which is the nearest city to us, has been doing something else. So because of those problems, because people can't always keep chickens, she keeps quite a few in her backyard. And what she did with some friends was she loaned them chickens and gave them mm-hmm. the chicks the day they hatched, and the kids raised them for 3 or 4 months and had that experience, even though they weren't able to keep them permanently, and then returned them to her. And, of course, the chickens they returned to her are such pets because these kids have doted on them. And I saw her walking around with one on her shoulder, nestled into her neck.
Don't you love it? They do. They like to nestle into the neck and nibble on your earrings, I've noticed.
That's right. See, this little girl was so happy. And the parents loved it. The kids loved it. And it was a great way. And I just think even though those families can't keep chickens right now, those kids are going to grow up with a different view of poultry and livestock. And they will, at some point in their lives, I'm confident, return to keeping chickens. So that's another way, you know, just think in terms of, you know, it's having a can-do attitude instead of saying, oh, gee, I can't keep chickens now. There's ways to do it. There's ways to share chickens or borrow chickens or whatever.
Yeah, well, I would do that anytime. And, of course, chickens are becoming increasingly popular in schools. And, Christine, I'm pleased to announce this. I've been talking with one of the local correctional facilities. They're currently doing composting, and they want to add chickens into their farm and garden and composting operation. So there'll be more about that coming along. So, and, of course, if chickens are the entryway to the gateway to other animals, who knows what will follow after the chickens.
That's right. That's right. I'm just thrilled to hear that. That's really great news.
Oh, it's going to be fun. It's going to be so much fun. I've just got two more, and then we'll just take a break and get to our main guest today. This next one is about, guess what? Corn, wheat, and prices. This one just came through this morning. Tyson Profit falls. Tyson's profit is falling as fewer eat chicken. And Tyson's Food said that its profit fell 21% for its third fiscal quarter because of higher grain costs and lagging results from the chicken business. I mean, this is big. He says poultry demand has remained low as cash-strapped families cut back on restaurant dining and prepared meals. And at the same time, while they're cutting back on the number that they order, the cost of feeding a chicken has soared more than 10 cents a pound since 2009. And this is a quote. Here's a quote for you, Christine. This is from the CEO, Donnie Smith of Tyson. The situation in our industry is today unsustainable. The situation in our industry today is unsustainable. That's according to the CEO, Donnie Smith of Tyson. Now, that's pretty profound, isn't it? Of course.
Yeah, how long have we been saying that?
Yeah, how long have we been saying that to have it come out? But, of course, unsustainable in many different ways, not just profit, but other ways. And then the lead-on story that actually quotes this other news article is pretty profound, too. And this one kind of really got my attention. It says, corn and wheat swap roles as the prices surge. Corn and wheat are swapping roles as the prices surge. This is by Carolyn Cui, C-U-I, or Cui, that is pronounced, says in a historic reversal of patterns, the price of corn is higher than the price of wheat. It's an anomaly that uptrending commodities trading strategies, and it's changing what poultry producers are feeding their chickens. And then Tyson and Pilgrim's Pride together process more than 3.7 billion chickens a year. So that's just two companies processing, that's with a B, 3.7 billion chickens a year. They become sprinkling wheat into their chicken feed. And, of course, chicken feed is traditionally a corn-based ration, but the ethanol producers are they're taking so much of the corn. And what stopped me on this article, Christine, is it says that ethanol producers are also turning to wheat as a supplement to corn. So now if I mean, why in the first place are we really using corn when we could be feeding livestock and people, and now they're talking about turning to wheat and using it as well. So that goes on and on, but it's about time to get to our commercials. One of the last things they said that since 1970, these numbers are pretty impressive. Since 1970, wheat has cost an average of $1 per bushel more than corn. So wheat's about $1 more than corn, and the reason is that wheat is used mainly to feed people. So it's only used to feed people mainly in flour for bread, pasta, pastries, while corn is more commonly fed to animals and now, of course, used for ethanol. It says, although corn prices topped wheat for the first time, it's due to, in part, from a strong demand from China. So there's even more competition with our U.S. corn, some of it going to China. So it's settled down, the corn. The price for corn on Monday was almost $7 a bushel, and wheat finished at about $6.50 a bushel. So we're going to see more, I think, and we'll be tracking these grain prices as they fluctuate. But it's not looking good for food prices in the planet. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, what I always say is there's a reason we call it sustainable. You know, I mean, these huge agribusinesses have been teetering on the edge, have really been over the edge for a long time. The only reason they've been able to distribute profits to their shareholders has been by leaving behind a lot of destruction and cost to the public to pick up for them. A lot of their the problems of antibiotic resistance and the health problems that causes, you know, the public just picks those costs up. And so I'm not surprised to see that we're coming to a point. I've seen that there's an end point for these operations. They just can't operate. They're disgusting, and their total focus is on that bottom line and getting money. And eventually the bottom's going to fall out of that. And it sounds like we may be at that point. Those of us who have local operations, and I'm hoping to see more, you know, I feel that way about every person who keeps, you know, half a dozen hens in the backyard is one less customer for that industrial egg system, and by undercutting that, and the idea of trying to meet our energy needs with ethanol is just lunatic. You know, we have to head in a different direction. We need the jobs. We need green jobs. We need new forms of energy. We need to be looking at solar and wind and stop relying on oil and that kind of product to power our country. We need, you know, that's just such a dead end, and we can see that now.
Yeah.
And hopefully we will turn to different sources, not to
yeah.
mention the problems of greenhouse gas emissions and the terrible issues of climate change, which are causing so many problems now and will only get worse.
Yeah, well, of course, one of my big beefs, I guess you'd say, with this is a problem with corn is it's so hard on the topsoil. It's really, so much of the soils have been degraded so badly, and corn is one of the harder crops to grow. And so we've really got to, I think, get back to local agriculture the way it used to be. So anyway, on that note, we certainly are living in very interesting times, and we certainly have a lot of challenges for the future generations coming up, don't we? Now, it is now time, our next guest, whether you believe in ghosts or not, we're going to talk a little bit about the spiritual world. Katie Letcher-Lyle, you came to the subject of the spirit world through going, she was a really skeptic at the beginning, and she has gone clear through her skepticism up to being a believer. And her journey in her new book, Friends in High Places, it takes you right through that journey, and she's an incredible writer. She's written over 20 books, and when we come back from our commercial break, we'll bring on author of Friends in High Places, Katie Letcher-Lyle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken,
All righty. Welcome back to the Chicken Whisperer, Backyard Poultry and Sustainable Lifestyles. When programming this show today, we had a discussion about what could be more sustainable than life after death. It's a little bit of a twist on sustainable, but certainly knowing that we do continue on after the death experience might change what we do here. Who knows? Our special guest today is Katie Letcher-Lyle. She is the author of 20 books and so many articles. I mean, she has appeared in so many magazines across the country. She is a writer, a teacher, a folk singer, and a speaker. She's taught for 25 years at Southern Seminary College, then taught graduate writing at Holland University. She's been a visiting professor at Washington and Lee University and a visiting professor at Mary Baldwin College and Randolph-Macon Women's College. She's been active in organizations that serve the handicapped, and currently, as appropriately for her title, she serves on the board of the Rockbridge Area Hospice, and she's also a volunteer there. So she comes to us with credentials up the wazoo. This is no flake at all, and certainly no woo-woo. So what I'd like to do is invite and welcome Katie Letcher-Lyle to the Chicken Whisperer Backyard Poultry Talk Show. Yeah. Hey, Katie, yeah. Are you with us there?
Hello. Yeah, I am definitely with you. What a fascinating program.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, it's going to get more fascinating with your book here.
Well,
thank
thanks.
You.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, Katie, this book, it's just out. It will be available at just about any bookstore, and there's a special deal that you can get it on Amazon, and I've got the Amazon link that I'll post here in the chat room. But tell us a little bit about spirituality and ancestors and ghosts, and because it pervades all cultures and all religions and all belief systems, and I just want to add in there too, you wrote another book called My Neighbor's Ghost. That was a wonderful book. I've really liked it. And what you found is everybody has a ghost story. It's hardly anyone that you don't meet that doesn't have a ghost story, and that's true all across the world. So tell us about that a little bit.
Well, I've looked all my life for ghost stories and just been astonished at how many people, when you say, do you believe in ghosts? Well, no, but I did have this real strange experience once. And then they tell you about it. And they're wonderful stories, and I've come to believe that they are very much true. And part of the reason I'm persuaded is because it is so pervasive in all cultures for as far back as we can possibly look. One of the first stories in this book, Friends in High Places, is from something like 600 B.C., and the fellow's name was Simonides of Ceos, C-E-O-S. And a friend of mine who teaches Latin at Washington and Lee University translated this ghost story and gave it to me. And it goes basically like this. It's quite short. You know, I found a dead man on the beach, and I buried him. And then 3 years later, the dead man came to me at night and told me not to go on a trip I was planning to go on. Three of my friends went on that trip and were all drowned at sea. I did not go because the dead man told me not to. After that, I went back and reburied him with a stone saying, here lies the man that saved Simonides' life. Isn't that a good story?
That's a great story.
From 600 B.C. So there are ghost stories everywhere.
Yeah.
And I believe
so, Christine, have you had a – Christine, you're live here with us too, Christine Heinrichs. Have you had a ghost experience or encounter?
Well, I certainly have. I think we all have. One that I was reflecting on as we prepared for this program, I was at a spiritual group of women once, and we were, praying and seeking to be in contact with others. And I had my daughter with me, and her father had died when she was 3 years old. And as we were sitting there in the circle, she said she felt she something, and she thought, oh, someone's father's here. And she said, as she sat there, she realized, oh, it's my father. And she very clearly felt his presence joining her. Mm-hmm. She's now a horse trainer, and she has been a trainer for many years, and she hasn't had very many serious accidents. Thank you for all those who are watching over her. But she says that her father and her favorite horse both ride with her all the time and watch over her.
Oh, wow.
That's wonderful. That's great.
Yes, we had a wonderful horse who joined our family some years later after her father died. It's very hard. You know, that's a difficult thing to be widowed with a young child. And this wonderful horse came into our life, and she became my daughter's other parent for many years and raised her into a teenager. And so I know that that honey is waiting for me at Heaven's Gates.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. And
that
also,
is. Katie,
maybe,
there's another book for you. Ghost Pets. Yeah.
But I was going to suggest that maybe your husband came back as a horse to take care of her.
Well, that's
a really
interesting point. He certainly could have been with her. The dates wouldn't have worked out because she was a really old horse even when we got her. But certainly he was with us. He has certainly watched over us since he passed.
Wonderful. Well, I've heard hundreds of stories like that. And these people that tell these stories, why would they tell a lie? I just believe the stories. I do. I believe that what people have said and what cultures have said and all of the Indian tribes that worshiped their ancestors and went and asked Granddaddy what to do in hard times, and you know, they wouldn't have done it if Granddaddy hadn't continually given good advice from the other side.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Well, that might be where it fits into the sustainable lifestyles part of the show here, Katie. You were wondering how you fit in with chickens and backyard poultry and sustainable lifestyles. But I do know that I have, and one of the reasons for having this topic today is in our chat room, and there are several of us that have had some deaths within the not very distant past, and we've had several topics about, you know, passing on and grieving and that sort of thing. So just thought we'd bring this in as part of that continuum of those different topics that we've had throughout the shows. So, Katie, there's a very interesting statement, and I know you were talking about the Monroe Institute, but I'm in your book here, and there's an interesting statement from Bob Monroe that I'd like to read that might set the tone for the next section. And that statement is, and it's interesting because you call the Monroe Institute the midlife school, which I think is an interesting title.
That's right.
Well, Bob says, we are separated from the dead not by time and not by space, but by vibration. All frequencies are jumbled together. Just as you can tune into a TV or radio frequencies with ease, you can do the same with the spirit world. All our lives, during awakening and during sleep, we're flickering along the living continuum. Even when we're unconscious, we are conscious. And that's from Robert Monroe. So, that's a great quote.
Oh, I know, and it's so true. We can just tune in with intention. You know, you could just sort of sit and say, have a tablet in front of you and a pencil and say, I've always wanted to talk to Cleopatra. She's my favorite person in history, which means that you have probably already set up a mutual vibration with Cleopatra. And when you go there, you just sort of center yourself and take a couple of deep breaths and then start a conversation, see what happens, and record the conversation because you will be in sort of an altered state. You might not remember later what was said. So you should sort of jot down notes, you know, what did she say? What did she look like? Where were you when you asked her to come and talk to you? In other words, what kind of a setting do you see? And then just listen. And I've just had phenomenal success talking to people in history that interest me a lot, like Pocahontas and like a young Mayan girl one time when I was on a dig in Honduras. And I got all kinds of interesting information from both of them. And I believe it's real. And, you know,
yeah. Well, you teach that, too. I mean, in your writing classes, wasn't that one of the exercises that you would use in
yeah.
your classes?
Yeah, and every now and then someone would look at me as if I were crazy, and I would say, just try it. But 99% of the time, people really got into it and had interesting conversations with everybody from Jesus to Robert E. Lee. By the way, I love the story about Robert E. Lee's chicken. I'd forgotten that. I'd read it somewhere but forgotten it. That's just great.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a comment in the chat room, Katie, by Ron. He says, I don't think ghosts are here to look after us. I think they're here mainly just to play tricks on us. And that's what I plan on. He says basically God and Jesus have the rest of us covered. So tricks, taking care of us versus playing tricks on us. What do you think about that?
Well, again, I think it's your intention, and that's why I don't play with Ouija boards, because I think that's a kind of game situation, and what you're inviting in is unfiltered spirits who might be evil, they might be playing tricks on you, they might be, you know, fooling you, they might be pretending to be Jesus or God, and you don't know. So I don't play with Ouija boards. I intend very carefully to cover myself with white light, to ask for only benign spirits to come and speak to me, and I've just never had a bad experience.
Oh, excellent. Good
yeah.
for you. Good for you.
And I do think we all have, I think we have protectors in the sky, friends in high places, and I think, you know, they're called God and Jesus by some people, and they're called guides by others, and I refer to mine as the my upstairs crew, and mm-hmm. I can ask them anything about anything, and I do feel that there are, you know, a bunch of them, and that they're protecting me, and every now and then I have the impression that one of them is somebody who died that I was very close to, and I think my grandfather's among them, but I don't sense that all my other three grandparents are, you know, so I mm-hmm. don't know. I just think that sometimes spirits on high do help humans on earth.
Yeah, there's another comment in the chat room, Katie, from Dragon says that she has conversations with her, let me find it here again, it jumps around, but conversations with her grandmother during her dreams. Are we more open in the dream states than other states?
Yes, I definitely think so. One time after my father had died, and he was a wizard in the stock market, you know, he was a Marine Corps general that had a bunch of kids and no help and, you know, no money, whatever. But he invested a little bit in the stock market and then a little bit more and a little bit more, and he was just a very wise investor. And so we left his children and his widow pretty well off when he died. But one time I was having difficulty deciding what to do about some stock during one of our crises. And so I asked my father as I went to sleep to come and talk to me. Well, I had a dream about him, which was this, that I was sitting on a woodsy path, and a bunch of trees had fallen over me, but I wasn't hurt. And my father was standing over to the side, but he didn't say anything. And so I woke up the next morning thinking I had not gotten an answer at all from him. But when I told the story to my stockbroker, he said, well, the message is very clear to me. He told you to stay where you are. You're sort of trapped by these fallen trees, so just stay where you are. And I did, and it worked out very well for me. So I just think that's, you know, I didn't see that as a message at all, but my stockbroker did.
That's pretty good. Has
yeah.
a practical side there, doesn't it? Never thought about
it. Oh, I do think there's a practical side to it. I think you can ask your guide what you ought to eat today, or whether it's a good idea to take this drug that your doctor wants you to take. And my answers
yeah.
always come no, and I'm 73 years old, and I don't take any prescriptions at all, and I'm real healthy, so I think it works.
Yeah, well, it can't hurt. I mean, well, you can't hurt. And of course, there's a saying that goes that you will see it when you believe it, not that you will believe it when you see it. So that sometimes applies
to the spiritual
world. That's
a scientific view, you know, and we have at least two different views of the world very much at odds with each other in our country today, and one of them is exactly that one. You can't believe anything you can't see. And everything is exactly what physics has said it is, traditional Newtonian physics. But that's not true anymore. I don't think that's true at all. I think once you believe it, that's when the switch came for me. And I began to see, to look back on my life and to see how guided I have been. I could tell the story of my handicapped daughter, Jenny. And during the last third of my pregnancy, I was writing some shows for the Office of Economic Opportunity. It was during the Carter administration when they were giving money to things like that. And the series was called Footsteps. And there were five of us doing the writing, and we were doing 16 different topics that were supposed to help inform uninformed people how to deal with nutrition and childbirth and all kinds of things. Well, we all chose the things we felt most comfortable with, and then there were still some left on the table that nobody wanted to touch. And one of them was how parents react to discovering that a child has a handicap. And because I'm a nice Southern girl, I said, well, I'll do it. I don't want to do it, but I'll do it. And so I had 3 months of research and a television show focused on that under my belt when my child was born with cerebral palsy and mental retardation. And it was fascinating how that information I had gathered, never for a second thinking that anything was wrong with this child, it was wonderful how that gave me the opportunity to sort of step back and be a little objective about this subject that was, of course, devastating, and yet I never felt devastated. So I never thought that was anything but coincidence until I, you know, began my spiritual path and sort of discovered what I really think is true.
They say that coincidence is what is when God wants to be anonymous.
Oh, that's wonderful. I like that.
Interesting. Well, there's a little story here about a coincidence in the chat room that comes from Fiona. She says, we were driving on a country road late at night and just about to go around a curve, and all of a sudden her car completely died and came to rest on the side of the road. When we got it started again, it took off slowly past the curve and only discovered that a truck had turned over in the middle of the road. They hadn't slowed down. They would have gone head into that truck. How about that?
Oh,
I just got goosebumps on that.
Thank
you, Fiona, for sharing
wonderful.
That.
Thank you, Fiona. Oh, I love that story. I love that story. Fabulous.
Wow. Well, it goes on a little more. Fiona continues to say that if we hadn't slowed down, we both would have died in the. We both. Okay, I'm jumbling two stories here, so I don't want to get it wrong. So anyway, but that. Thank you, Fiona, for sharing that story.
Oh yes, thank you, Fiona.
Yeah, wow. And any other stories in the guest? Yes.
Well, I was going to just tell them that for a month until the 1st of September, anybody who has a Kindle or a Nook can download this book from Amazon for 99 cents. And I did that in the hopes that a lot of people would buy it for 99 cents and then like it and tell all their friends. But I just wanted to tell your audience that, too.
Excellent, excellent. And Katie, I'm going to post that link right now in the chat room for the Kindle special
all
deal,
right.
So you can get her book ahead for just 99 cents. And and that's good till the end of the month on the Kindle edition.
Yeah.
So it is on Amazon, and shortly it'll be available in paperback.
Shortly, the paperback will be available. I had no idea that it took longer, so I thought it would be available at the same time as the Kindle for $14.95. No, for $9.95. I'm sorry. The Kindle edition will go to $9.95 at the end of the month, which is the usual price for a Kindle download. And any day now, you'd be able to purchase the book off Amazon for $14.95. And also, you could call the publisher. I'd like to name the publisher, and folks can just look the publisher up on the web, and there are places that you look. You know, you go to
I can't
remember what it is.
Barringer Publishing.
Buy the book or something. It's Barringer Publishing. And you can look it up with www.barringerpublishing.com. And I'll spell it, Barringer. And that's how to get
publishing.com.
Copy now. Yeah. And you can also order from the company directly. They apparently have the books.
Okay, excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I just put that on the www.barringerpublishing.com on the chat room there, so they can just click and go to it.
Oh, great.
Excellent. Well, well, Katie, I'm looking in your book here now, too, and there's some really interesting photographs. Would you like to tell us a little bit about these photographs? I mean, I've taken photographs, and I've had things like this kind of show up with them, and I didn't really think of anything about it. But I have had them, not so much with my digital recently, but tell us about these photographs.
Well, which one are you looking at? Because there are many in there. And
there
are
all many
photographs that have anomalies in them. I mean, one is of a guest bedroom in a house, I think it's in Vicksburg, Mississippi, where there was reputed to be a ghost. And four of my friends were at this house, and all three. One of the wives wasn't interested. She stayed downstairs in the bar drinking. And the other three went upstairs. And two of the people, one of the husbands and one of the wives, felt a presence in the room. And just before they left, this one fellow said that he might like to stay there and see if he could communicate with Madeline, who was the name of this woman. And she'd been killed by the tavern owner's wife, who discovered that she was, although she was just a servant girl, she was a mistress. So anyway, he turns around and takes a picture of the spot on the bed where Madeline is supposed to appear. And there's a glow in the photograph right there where Madeline was, which I think is just fascinating. He believes he got a picture of the spirit of Madeline.
And in each of these photographs that are in your book, I mean, it looks like it's almost clouds, either orbs or little clouds. And there's one that was even with the ring-tailed cat. You see the cat, and then you can see the cat through the smoke almost, or whatever it is.
Absolutely. And we took 15 pictures of that cat, I'm sure, because it was so unusual. And I still don't know what kind of a cat it was, but it was in Farmington, New Mexico, in a cave halfway down a mountain. You had to go down these narrow cutout steps, and they'd made a one-room kind of stayover, you know, like a bed and breakfast in this one room. And it was like 100 feet below the surface of the cliff and 300 feet above the bottom of the cliff. So it was a real unusual place to spend the night. And we were just sitting there. Nobody was smoking, so that's not smoke, you see. And we were taking pictures of this interesting ring-tailed cat. We'd been told about ahead of time that they came to eat, and so they'd left a bag of Purina cat chow there for us. And I have, you know, 12 pictures of this cat, and then this one picture that appears to have the ghost of a horse or a man, you can't really tell which, in it. And then 5 more pictures of the cat. And in this one picture, this shape appeared. And nobody had any feeling about it, so I don't know what it was about. But, I mean, there was nothing different about that picture from my perspective than any of the others that we took.
Oh, wow. Christine, have you ever seen pictures that just have these little orbs or these little shadowy things in them that you can't figure out how they got there?
I have seen those. I have never taken any. I have not had that kind of experience, but these things manifest in so many different ways that certainly that's a provocative one, that it could be captured, that something that we couldn't see well could be captured on film. You know, we certainly have examples from science in which things are captured on film that can't be seen other ways. So, it certainly is not unbelievable to me. I think it remains to be seen. You know, we'll have to take more pictures and see where we're led on this.
I agree.
Okay. Well, it's time just to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, Katie, maybe we can talk about some of your hospice experiences.
I'd love to.
Because you're a volunteer as well as on the board there. So our special guest today is Katie Letcher-Lyle. Her newest book out of 20 is called Friends in High Places, and it's one woman's spiritual journey. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Looking for something? Find it online at BidBird Auctions. BidBird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made BidBird Auctions their new home. And get sold on BidBird.
And the Mighty Bird Against Prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Welcome back to Backyard Poultry, the Chicken Whisperer talk show. Today, our special co-host is Christine Heinrichs, author of How to Raise Poultry, and our special guest is Katie Letcher-Lyle, author of 20 books, and her latest is called Friends in High Places, One Woman's Spiritual Adventures. So, Katie, and my goodness, yeah. Go ahead. Why don't you maybe tell us a little bit about your hospice experiences, because you are on a hospice board, and you have been a volunteer for many, many years.
That's right. I don't know why I got into that. I think to overcome my own fear of death, and I got into it shortly after I began to go to the Monroe Institute and to change my belief system. And I just can't tell you how many of my patients, a day or two before they die, will say something. I mean, it's all very offhand and very sort of, you know, easy. Like, oh, my sister was here last night, and so I think I'm going to die because she's dead. You know, that's what one woman told me. And I've had, there's one wonderful experience that did not happen to me, but happened to one of our nurses that I would love to tell about, and I tell about it in the book. And that is that this man was dying out in the country, and he was being tended by his granddaughter, who was kind of the only person left in the family to take care of him. And so she was his primary caretaker. And so one day, the hospice nurse says, he says to the hospice nurse, oh, my brother's coming to see me. Well, we're very big on reconciliation before death. If there's ever any, you know, separation or uncomfortableness among siblings or parents or anything like that. We try to do everything we can to smooth it over in the belief that a person dies happier and more contented if there are no stresses, you know, family stresses and regrets and things like that in his life. So this nurse said, well, that's wonderful. How long has it been since you saw your brother? Oh, he said a long time. Well, so on the way out, the nurse says to the granddaughter, who's washing dishes in the kitchen, I'm so glad that Mike's brother's coming to see him. And the girl turned around and she said, oh, he doesn't have any brothers. And the nurse was a little bit puzzled. And then the girl said, but you know, when he was a teenager, he had a brother who died in a tractor accident. And the nurse said, oh, interesting. So she goes back the next day. And then this time the man says, my brother can't come to see me. His car's broken down. And then the nurse wasn't quite sure what to do, but she just said, I see. And, you know, we're very accepting of whatever the patients say to us. And certainly nobody says, oh, that's just your imagination. You know, we just, of course, don't do that. So then the third day, the nurse goes back, and the man says, my brother's got a new tractor. He's coming to see me with the tractor. And that was a couple of days before he died. And on the day that he died, the nurse was there for the 11th hour watch. And he suddenly looks up at a totally empty corner of the room and says, oh, my goodness, look at that. That's a great big new John Deere. That's the greenest tractor I ever saw. And look, it's got two seats on it, and my brother's driving it. And he wants to reach down and pull me up, and I can't. And he's trying to lift his poor weak hand. I mean, the man is dying. And the nurse, just out of instinct, lifted his arm up towards the corner of the room that he was speaking to, and the man heaved one sigh and died. Isn't that a wonderful story?
Wow.
And nurses would not lie. I mean, of course it really happened. So I believe I believe that our people come to take us when it's time, and that people are there to help us into heaven or into whatever the next level is that mankind goes to after he dies.
We should all go out so grandly on a brand new John Deere.
Isn't that a wonderful story? The image
I love
is so
that
wonderful.
Image.
I love it too.
Good. I know. And the reason I don't just believe this, I know this. You're all there? Hello?
Yeah.
Yes, we're here.
Oh, I'm sorry. The reason I know this is that I have taken several courses now in remote viewing. So what I do know is that while we're alive, parts of our brain, mind, or something can go to untold locations and bring back legitimate information. And one of the ways you practice is with geographic coordinates. Well, I know absolutely nothing about those, but if I'm told to go to, 40 west and 60 east or whatever it is, I just send my imagination there. And it's fascinating how often you come back with real information, information mm-hmm. that's verifiable. Which I think is
very
wonderful.
Yes, yeah. And of course there are professional psychics that do that. They make their living off of getting remote viewing, and they've been certainly active in our military as well. So,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And now we're seeing more shows too that come on about mental abilities. There's The Mentalist, I think, and,
uh-huh.
and there's. I think some of the more paranormal shows are becoming more abundant. And I have to say, I don't have a TV, so I don't watch them, but I hear people talk about them. Katie, do you think our society is getting more open to psychic abilities and powers of the mind?
Well, it seems that way to me, but then my best friend is a total doubter, and she just says, oh, Katie, you've always been crazy. So she doesn't think so, and of course I'm hearing more about it because the people who do believe it contact me or tell me things because they know they'll find a receptive ear. So, yes, I think that we are as we ought to be. I think it's undeniable that there are more experiences as people are, dead and then brought back to life again. More and more, I mean, there are millions now of near-death experiences, just millions of them on record, many, many books about them. Some of them are personal testimonials, and many of them are from doctors who are observing this in their patients. You know, hey, doc, where was I when you were beating on my heart there? Well, the man was physically dead, and the doctor will say, what do you mean, where were you? Well, I was in this really gorgeous place, and there were fountains and birds, and I talked to my grandmother, and I just don't know where I was. These people are often baffled. They don't even know about near-death experiences when they have one. So I think they're very real. And I also love reading about children who have near-death experiences, because children can't make those things up. So
right.
I think they're true. I think they're true. But let me just finish about the remote viewing. Since I know that part of my living brain or mind or imagination, whatever you want to call it, can go to places and bring back information, I'm assuming that that's the part of us that will survive death and be in some state where there appears to be no time and no space.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I believe it, because I know
yeah.
I can do it.
Right, right. By the way, there's a disclaimer in the chat room here from Andy. Andy Schneider just joined us in the chat room. He says, just for the record, this does not necessarily reflect the views of the radio show nor its hosts. So it's kind of controversial
not.
In the chat room what's going
oh.
on. Some
well, please
some
apologize.
Are sharing chat.
Please apologize to Andy for me, because I have no desire to push my views on anybody.
No, it's just another opinion like politics, in
sure.
a way, sort of Republicans versus Democrats versus commercial farming versus industrial whatever. So, no, this is
right.
not in any way intended to impose anyone's views or religious beliefs or whatever. So,
No, of course not.
Yeah.
And I don't think religion has anything to do with it. My experience, and I've been doing this for over 20 years now, is that religion in what I'm talking about doesn't play a part, except that Christians who believe that when they die they're going to see Jesus when they have near-death experiences do. And I think probably that Indians who believe they're going to the happy hunting ground probably when they have near-death experiences do go to the happy hunting ground. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just think probably what we believe very much influences our lives on Earth. Why shouldn't it influence our lives after Earth?
I'm sorry, Sam. Yeah, I'm here. Okay. Well, again, it's just belief systems, and there's just different belief systems, and there are so many different belief systems in the world, and of course, everyone's belief system is right because it's theirs.
So, that's right.
So we're not trying
and
to change anyone's belief systems or trying to do
no, not at all.
Do anything.
I mean, and I definitely know that we create our own reality. You know, I know that,
mm-hmm.
and everybody knows it if you think about it, you know. If you're going to regard a rainy day as a nasty time when you can't get out on the golf course and you hate it, and you were going to beat your best friend today and all that, then a rainy day might make you miserable. It's the very same day, though, in which your roommate might say, you know, I just love a rainy day because I can drink hot cocoa and read books all day and I don't have to go out. You know, so it's my favorite kind of day. And I just think, you know, we're both talking about the same day. It's just that we have different realities about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. That's
yeah.
just true in so many places.
That's true. What do you think, Christine?
Well, it's certainly true. I think we see some of that in the problems of addiction that people struggle with so much. You know, those are people who are absolutely creating the problems for themselves by, you know,
oh, yeah.
taking these substances and continuing to take them and not seeking help to overcome that. And, of course, that's true, you know, the point you make is a good one, that those thoughts that we have create what our experiences are going to be. You know, I'm not going to
right.
say that people in concentration camps are struggling in
no.
Somalia.
No.
can be happy, because certainly those are external circumstances that are overwhelming. But beyond that, the way we experience our world is really entirely the way we frame it for ourselves. And if we frame
it,
it's one of the things I've been working on. You know, I tend to approach my work and say, oh, I'm overwhelmed. I have all this work to do, and I have all these deadlines to meet, and I'm really busy, and it's really hard. And, does that sound familiar? But if I say, I have this wonderful work, and I love it, and I have this great opportunity to do this wonderful work, and it's really fun for me, that just changes the whole experience, and it opens me up to seeing better ways to write these stories and different stories around me. So it certainly is, it's a great blessing to have that. And I feel that, certainly there are spiritual aspects to that we are guided to, and that we can avail ourselves of spiritual help if we're willing to do so.
Oh, I think so, too. I do. I asked my upstairs crew one time why, if that help is available to everyone, why terrible things happen to people in this world? And their response was, well, some people refuse to listen. And that was a real wake-up call for me, because I then started to listen more. And I've been extremely lucky in my life. And I think it's because I try to listen to guidance.
Uh-huh.
Well, that gives credence then to, even Jesus went to the desert for 40 days and 40 nights to fast and to listen and to cleanse himself. I mean, that's a time-proven way of, I guess, better listening and just getting aligned with whatever one gets aligned with.
Yeah, right. And it's hard to talk about these things that are not part of our normal, everyday social intercourse. They're just not. And sometimes it's hard to talk about what's happening or what that guidance is exactly. And it's probably different for every human being on Earth. But I think it's there for all of us.
Yeah. Well, is it guidance? Is it inspiration? Is it that aha thought that just comes out of the blue when you're in the shower type of thing? I mean, it comes in so many different ways and forms.
Oh yeah.
I think.
Oh yeah. And think of all the people who claim that they dreamed the way to invent the sewing machine, or dreamed the way, or just had some sort of a aha moment and knew how to make the McCormick Reaper, for example. Those are two examples I know of. And, of course, Samuel Taylor Coleridge in writing, the famous poems. in Xanadu did Kubla Khan a mighty pleasure dome decree. What's the name of that poem? It starts that way.
I know the poem you mean, but I can't think of it either.
I can't think
Ozymandias.
Of the title of it. No,
Ozymandias
was the king of kings. No, Ozymandias was the king of kings in the desert whose statue had toppled over into the desert and was half covered with sand. But on the plinth it wrote, I am Ozymandias, king of kings. Look on me, you mighty, and despair. And, of course, he's lying down half covered with sand, which is a great lesson for all of us.
Oh, Jim. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's just about time to wrap it up. We do have a trivia question today and a prize to give away. So we'll be following that up here shortly. So, Katie Letcher-Lyle, author of Friends in High Places, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And Christine, any final comments or questions for Katie?
No, but I just found that it's Kubla Khan, Katie.
Kublai Khan. Thank you.
That's it.
Good. Thank you.
Great mind.
You're a better poet than I am. You have great mind. But Pat, thank you so much for letting me talk on your show, and all you chicken keepers, I'm going to start buying nothing but organic chickens from now on, after what I heard in one program. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yes. Well, it's certainly been a lively discussion it's been a very lively discussion in the chat room, and thanks so much for bringing on what's sometimes a controversial subject, but it's also a universal subject. Yeah, like you said in the beginning, It's in every culture, in every religion, in and
yes.
It's rare the person that doesn't have a spirit story. So thank you for really sharing. Okay.
Thank
very
you
good.
So
That's
much
Katie,
for having
Katie Letcher
me.
Oh, our pleasure.
Thanks.
Katie Letcher-Lyer, author of Friends in High Places, a book that's just now coming out. Okay, Christine, let's go to a brief commercial break, and when we come back, we'll do our trivia prize for the day. And if you could come up with a trivia question, that would be wonderful. And if not, I've got one. Be
okay.
Right back.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Alrighty. Welcome back to the Chicken Whisperer Backyard Poultry and Sustainable Lifestyles Talk Show. Today we have our prize today is a nest box from Ware Manufacturing. It's a nesting box. And Christine, you're live on the air here. Do you have a trivia question?
I do. Relating to that 1905 standard of perfection, name one or more breeds that have been added since that 1905 to the American class of exhibition poultry show in the American Poultry Association standard. There's 6 of them that have been added since 1905.
Oh, my. Okay. Name one or more breeds that has been added to the American class of poultry since 1605. 3-4 I've got myself tongue-tied now. Just call in at 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. Okay, but that's a tough question there, Christine.
I think if people think in terms of, you know, modern 20th century poultry, you'll be able to come up with at least one.
Okay, great. 347-637, and well, we're going to go with caller number one since the time is so short. So I'm going to bring on caller number one, area code 806. You're live on the air with the Chicken Whisperer Talk Show. Please state your name and where you're calling from. 806. No? Okay, we're going to go to area code 270. 270, you're live on the air with the Chicken Whisperer Talk Show. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, my name's Suzanne, and would one of them be the Buckeye?
No, the Buckeye was already in the standard in 1905.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Okay, good guess, though.
Yes,
area code
it was a very good guess, but
yeah, area
those Buckeyes have been around for a long time.
Okay, you're live on the air with the Chicken Whisperer Talk Show. State your name and where you're calling from. Hello, area code 336. You're live on the air.
Oh, hey, this is Jessie again.
I didn't mean to
hey,
hit
Jeffy.
One, hon. I actually did not mean to hit one.
Okay. Well, we've just got 60 seconds left on the show. What we'll do is have to save this prize for later. Maybe Andy can give it on the Facebook page. Okay. Well, Christine, thanks so much for calling in with us. You've been a wonderful co-host on this very special show with our talking about the spiritual word and Katie Letcher Lyle's new book. Andy Schneider is the Chicken Whisperer and the driving force of our show today. He will be back with us on Monday, August 15th. And, of course, appreciation to our chat room chickeneers and all our listeners for participating. It's been a lively show, especially today. And, of course, blogtalkradio.com provides our radio, chat, and our video services. On behalf of us all, blessings to all. We love you all so much. And may the flock forever and for always be with you. God bless everybody.
¶¶